It's time to unite our hearts and heal our wounds of separation, to shift our collective consciousness from head to heart, from fear to love. Join evolutionary leader, healer, and spiritual mentor Sue DeMay and other heart-centered leaders for enlightening conversations and profound experiences of oneness.
Welcome, everybody, to the Living Oneness Gathering. I am your host, Sue DeMay. It's an honor to be here once again with you and to be sharing this space with everybody to really unify us in love for each other and our planet. The world is an interesting place right now, and the more we can really embody our heart, compassion, love, peace, the more we can contribute to in expanding love in the world, which is really what's needed right now. I feel like right now what's really happening is there's this massive call for love, and all of us that are showing up to be love in action, to be a presence, a healing presence, a loving presence, a peaceful presence, it's really having an impact. So thank you all for being here and for joining your hearts with us. And today I'm really excited because I have a very special guest. I have interviewed this guest one other time before on one of my other radio shows. I'm honored to have him again as a guest. I will introduce you to Neil Donald Walsh. If you don't know Neil, then you're in for a treat. And if you do know him, then of course you're in for a treat. He's a best-selling author, and he's written over 40 books or written 40 books on contemporary spirituality and its practical application in everyday life. And this is what I really love is about being able to take the lessons and the teachings and integrate them into your life. That's really important. His most impactful series for me was Conversations with God. But today we're going to be talking about his new book called God Talk, Experiences of Humanity's Connections with a Higher Power. So welcome, Neil. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you, Sue. It's lovely to be here with you. I'm a little sad today because of the terrible incident over the skies of Washington, D.C., just hours ago, which took the lives of 67 people, not a single survivor of a mid-air crash between an airliner and a helicopter, military helicopter. And I'm feeling very sad, along with many other people, that such a thing has occurred, and thinking of the families who are at the airport waiting for that plane to land. The plane was only minutes away from landing. It was on its way down to the landing level, and when it crashed into the helicopter, and both aircraft landed in the Potomac River, and there wasn't a single survivor. So my heart feels lots of pain for all those people who were waiting in the airport for their loved ones to get off the plane. And it's just a sad moment right now. But I'm happy to be here with you and glad that I was able to keep this commitment. How may I serve the moment?
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. And I'm just extending my heart. I can feel the tenderness in your heart right now. And I can feel the grief. I feel like the grief right now for everyone in the world is palpable. I feel a real sense of loss and grief in general with humanity, because I feel a lot of the collective consciousness a lot. And today I want to really focus on the message of how we can find that hope, that inspiration, that gain some insights and maybe even another perspective of what's going on in the world, and how we can navigate these moments where they just make us feel so, you know, struck in the heart and and when we look into the world, it can feel disheartening, but I really try and bring a message of hope and inspiration. So as we talk about the idea of God communicating with us, that really inspires me. And I love your approach to it. And you mentioned in your book that God talks to everyone. God talks to all of us. And can you share in your experience what ways God communicates with us?
And yes, I'd be happy to, Sue. In my understanding, and from what I was told in my conversations with God, well, let me back up just one second to contextualize what I'm going to say, because I asked God in the conversation. This was a written dialogue between me and my experience of the divine. And I wrote, why me? Why would you choose me to have this experience? The answer I got instantly was, oh, sweetheart, it's not just you. You're not the only person that I'm communicating with. I communicate with everyone all the time. But not everyone listens, not everyone hears, certainly not everyone keeps a written record of, what they're experiencing. But I'm communicating with everyone all the time. And then God explained to me the many ways in which God communicates to us, in 100 different ways across 1,000 moments in a million lifetimes, if you please. The chance utterance of a friend we just happened to run into on the street that we haven't seen in 5 years, and they just happen to say something that directs his attention specifically to what's been in our heart for the past 3 months. And it's we call it a coincidence. Oh, it's just an incredible coincidence, really. Or perhaps the overheard conversation in a coffee shop. This actually happened to me a few years ago. I was in a coffee shop and I was confronted with some relationship challenges in my life. And I was thinking about it and, kind of really in a moody place about it. And then a couple at a table next to mine were having a conversation about their relationship. It wasn't an angry, it wasn't a, an argument. They were just discussing relationship issues and challenges. And I couldn't help but overhear. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but they were talking rather loudly and they were at that very next table. I heard the whole conversation. It was as if they were giving me advice. It was an incredible conversation. I finally went over to them after about 15 minutes of it, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to intrude, but I got to tell you that you guys are sharing information with each other that is really helping me right now in what I'm going through right now in my life. And so these are the kinds of ways, the words on a billboard. We turn the corner around on a highway and we see 12-foot high letters on a billboard, the 25 words across the top of the billboard that just happened to answer a question we've had in our mind for the past 3 days. So the lyrics of the next song you hear on the radio, driving down the road in your car. And again, here we are, we're musing about something. We're just thinking deeply about something. We turn the radio on as we're driving to the store, and the lyrics of the next song we hear on the radio, directing their attention specifically to what we've been thinking about. These are some of the countless ways that God is speaking to us, not the least of which is the way that I heard the voice of God, which is simply thoughts in my mind that were so significant that I didn't want to forget them. And I wrote them down. I actually copied them down, very much like taking dictation. And those thoughts brought up other questions that I had about life. And so I asked those questions just as part of a process that I found myself engaged in. And then I received other thoughts in my mind in answer to those questions. But they weren't my ideas, Sue. They weren't my thoughts. They were thoughts that I never had. Thoughts, in fact, in many cases, that contradicted everything I'd been taught all of my life. But I wrote them down anyway, even though they seemed improbable and contradictory to what I'd been taught. I wrote them all down, and I wound up with many, many, many pages of handwritten dialogue. I mean, I'm talking hundreds of pages of handwritten dialogue. And so I think that's an example of some of the many ways, countless ways that God is communicating with us. I'm going to be a little bit ironic right now and talk about this very program that we're now on. There are people watching this right now. By sheer coincidence, by happenstance, they just happen to be hearing these messages? Or could this very program be part of the ways that God is communicating with all of us, and those of us here, and all those who have the opportunity to hear this message are part of that process? So, what are some of the ways in which God talks to us? It's happening right now, in my view. I could be wrong, of course, but that's my idea about it.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to what you're speaking about. It's watching for the signposts. And the key is, if God is talking to us all the time, in every moment, the key is, are we listening, or are we open and willing to see the signposts, or even open to look for them or to recognize them as that's what it is, as opposed to brushing it off as coincidence or brushing it off as meaningless. I really feel like if we had our eyes wide open and our heart wide open, we would actually recognize the miracles of the communication in every single moment, in every single way. Even stubbing our toe can be a sign to like slow down or pay attention or wake up in this moment, right?
I couldn't agree more. And that's why I wrote in the book, God Talk, that you mentioned a moment ago, which is a book, by the way, that I was asked to write. You know, it's interesting, Sue, most authors, they write a book because there's something they feel they want to say. And so they write a book, and then they have to try to find a publisher. You know, and maybe they have a literary agent if they're lucky, and the agent, you know, shops it around to see if anybody wants to publish this particular book. In my case, in this particular case, I got a call. My phone rang. And it's a publisher calling me. This never happens. At least it never happened to me. In the first 40 books that I wrote, it never happened. But the publisher, I got this call from the publisher, and he said, would you be willing to write a book for us? And I said, what did you have in mind? They said, we'd like you to explain to people how they could have their own conversation with God, how they could have the experience that you've had. I said, well, of course, I can't guarantee that that will happen, but I can certainly tell you the steps that I took, that I had to take in order for it to occur in my life. And they said, please do. And I did. And I wrote it down. Then they did something quite unusual, Sue. They put in, I thought this was fascinating. They put an invitation on the internet. They placed on the internet an open invitation. Anyone who has ever felt that they have had an intervention in their life directly from God, specific to a particular circumstance or situation, tell us about it. And they called me about a month and a half later, and they said, we're getting hundreds of emails, not one or two or not a dozen, hundreds of emails from people all over the world, in every country on the planet, telling them about God's intervention in their life. So they said, we'd like to put this in the book called God Talk to demonstrate to people that it's not just about this one guy out there in Oregon, you know, who talks to God, but it's about people everywhere. And here's evidence of it. So they took, I think, 7 or 8 or 10 of the most interesting stories, what they felt were the most fascinating stories, and put them as the second half of this book that they titled God Talk. So the book contains the 6-step process that I think people could use to experience their own conversation with God, and that it includes those stories I told you about from other people around the world. Fascinating stories about how God can intervene in our individual lives.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I enjoyed the book. I read majority of it. I got through about 90% of it. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed the book. And I like the stories of having other people's experience. Like you say, it's when you ask that question, it's like, why me? It's like, well, why not you? Why not all of us? And we're all having that opportunity. We all have that opportunity to speak to God on a daily basis. Would you mind sharing some of the steps, some of the 6 steps, or how we can connect?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Sue. The first of the six steps is what I call possibility. That is, if we want to have a conversation with God, we have to acknowledge to ourselves, we have to embrace the notion that it's possible that there even is a God. Not everyone believes in God. Most people do, I have to say. The sociologists have taken surveys. I'm not sure whether you're aware of this, but in the past 10 years, they've taken surveys in many of the nations of the world asking a single question: do you believe in a higher power? And you know what? 8.5 of every 10 people, 85% of the respondents said yes, they believe in a higher power. They have different ideas about what it is or what it wants or what it does, how it interacts with us, but 85% of the respondents said, yep, we believe in a higher power. So the first step is possibility, not only that there is such a thing called God or Yahweh or Jehovah or whatever word we want to use to describe the higher power, but the second level of possibility that it's possible that God talks to all of us. Not just to the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury or the chief ulama or the head rabbi or some guru or some saint, but that God talks to everyone, even Sue. That God will, hard as this is to believe, but even that God will even talk directly to Sue and to me and to the first baseman for the New York Yankees. I mean, to everybody, to the average person, which takes us to step number two, which is worthiness. To embrace our own worthiness. Because, it was interesting, Sue, when I first began having my own experience of conversations with God, I didn't feel worthy. I almost stopped the whole process because I thought, this can't really be happening. God wouldn't be talking directly to me. I mean, seriously, as bad as I've been in my life, I've never stolen anybody's money or hurt anyone in particular physically, but I made some mistakes. And I've said some things I should never have said, and I've done some things that I truly wish I never did. And so I was, I felt so unworthy. And I realized that unless I embraced my worthiness, so I had to go back into the Bible and read the story of the prodigal son. That even the prodigal son was welcomed back, into God's presence and into God's experience. So I thought, okay, fair enough. I've done some things I wish I hadn't done, said some things I wish I hadn't said, but I'm worthy. So it's a not an unimportant second step for all of us to agree with ourselves that we are worthy of God talking directly to us and through us. Which takes us to step number three, which is willingness. Because once we think we're worthy, we have to be willing for it to actually happen. And let me explain why I realize that willingness is an important step. Because we live in a culture, Sue, where there's a bias. There's a global cultural bias against the idea that God would be talking directly to any particular human being. Again, maybe the Pope, fair enough, or the head ulama, the chief rabbi, but not to average everyday people. You have to be kind of saintly or at least theologically caught up in things. But we have to be willing to move in a way that is contrary to the cultural bias. Oh, and by the way, this cultural bias is not an unimportant thing. Do you know most of the world's religions? To be fair, not all of them, but by far the majority of the world's religions would tell you that if you claim that God is talking directly to you, you're a blasphemer. You're a heretic. You're called an apostate. In some religions, that's even punishable. It's called an ecclesiastical sin to claim that God is speaking to you and through you. So, you've got to be willing, step number three, to be willing to move against that huge religious and cultural bias that says God doesn't talk to people, Neil, cut it out. Which takes us to step number four, wakefulness. Once we're willing to actually have an experience that everyone says is not okay, or many people say is not happening, then we have to be wakeful. That is, stay awake. Because as you mentioned just a moment ago, if we're not careful, we'll have the message go in one ear and out the other. Well, it'll go right past us, and we look right through it and don't see what's happening. We're not even hearing the message. That could be happening. I want to repeat the point I made earlier, right now, to people who are watching this very program. So we want to be careful to stay awake to all the things that are occurring and to the messages that come to us in these many different ways, and allow ourselves to actually receive them in a wakeful state of mind, which takes us to step number five, which is acceptance. See, the hardest thing for me to do was to accept what was happening as, in fact, messages from life to life through the process of life itself, or if you please, messages from the divine. I had to accept it. I didn't, because I was rejecting. I was rejecting the whole idea. And also, after once I accepted that it was actually happening, that I was having this interaction with the divine, then I had to accept the messages that I was receiving, which were, by some people's standards, totally unacceptable. So I was told in my conversation with God, "You ready for this?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as right and wrong.
Yeah.
There's no such place as hell. There's no such being as the devil or Satan. Satan does not exist. And God never really laid down for humanity 10 commandments and many other statements that were so contradictory to everything that had ever been told. I had to look deeply. I was forced to look deeply, deeply, and even more deeply at the meaning behind the meaning, you know, behind the meaning, rather than simply rejecting everything that did not seem to fall into a place with which I had previously agreed. So I had to move into a place of acceptance, no matter how unlikely the messages seemed to be, including a message that I received about the very book that I wrote. So I was told in the first part of the process, by the way, I did not sit down to write a book. I don't know whether people understand this or not, but I didn't sit down and think one day, you know, I think I'll write a book about a guy who has a conversation with God. Never even occurred to me to do such a thing. I was having, Sue, what for me was a very private personal experience, frankly, a very sacred experience that I never thought anyone, not even my spouse, not even my brother, much less people around the world, would ever hear about. I wasn't intending for it to be a publicly discussed, publicly explored experience. But I was told in the conversation, "Neil, you will write one day a book based on the conversation we're having. You will turn this into a book, and it will be accessed by many people." And you know, Sue, what I did when I heard that, I thought, well, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
You know, prove it. I actually said to God, you know, in my mind, prove it, because it's not going to happen. No publisher is actually going to say, hey, stop the presses. I got a guy here on the phone who's talking to God. Nobody's going to publish a book like that. So on a dare, daring God to show me, I sent my handwritten notes. I actually Xeroxed the pages and sent them to a publisher just to see what would happen. Well, the rest, as they say, is publishing history. I got a call about 5 weeks later from the publisher. It was a small publishing house. It wasn't a major publishing house, but it was a, you know, they put out 5 or 6 books a year. And they called me and said, "We want to publish this material." I said, "You're kidding me. You're going to turn this into a book?" They said, "Yeah, it's a great work of fiction. It's going to be on the fictional bestseller list." I said, "Oh, no, wait a minute. This is not a piece of fiction." And the guy on the phone says, Mr. Walsh, are you trying to tell me you think this actually happened to you? We thought you were just writing a fantasy story about a guy who has an argument with God. I said, excuse me, this actually happened to me and is happening, going on, even in these days and times. And the publisher said, well, okay, we'll put it out as a non-fiction book. It's not going to find 500 readers. People are not going to be drawn to a book because a guy in Oregon claims that God is talking to him. It's not going to happen. So you'd be lucky if you find 500 readers, but we find it interesting material. We'll put it out. And you know what? That publisher was right. It didn't find 500 readers. It found 5 million.
Well,
Not bragging, just saying.
yeah.
That's what happened.
God
Millions
spoke,
of
told
readers
you what was
in
going to
really,
happen.
yeah, millions of readers in 37 languages. And it was being read in China, in Moscow, in France, in Spain, and in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, of all places. I mean, even people in Pittsburgh were reading it.
So was that enough to convince you?
Yeah, I got it. I said, you know what? Okay, I get what's going on here. And I continued to have my conversations with God, which produced additional dialogue books. And that's my story. That brought me to the step number six, the final step,
Yes.
discernment. We have to be willing to discern and allow ourselves to be able to discern the difference between messages from the divine and the millions and bajillions of other messages we're receiving every day from, the internet and television and movies and, books that we might read, including mine. We have to be able to discern the difference. Is everything that happened? Because if we're not careful, we'll get into a place where we think that everything, is a message from the divine. You're walking to your car in the parking lot and after leaving the grocery store, and you reach into your pocket to get the car keys, and a little paper money happens to fall out of your pocket as you withdraw the car keys. And you look at the paper money on the ground and you think, it's a sign. God wants me to take all the money out of my pocket and throw it on the ground. It's a sign. God says, Neil, it was an accident. A little discernment, a little discernment, please. I'm not telling you to take all the paper money out of your pocket and throw it on the ground. So we have to be willing to use, I want to say, common sense and discernment. But let's be careful. That doesn't mean that we simply eliminate any message we receive from life, to life, about life, because the message feels too good to be true. I received many messages in my conversations with God, which frankly felt too good to be true. And I said to God, how can I believe this is too good to be true? And you know what God re responded? She said, Neil, sweetheart, if God can't be too good to be true, who can? I said, can't argue with that.
No, can't argue with
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
that.
And those are the six steps. Of course, I go into it in much greater detail
Yes.
in the book, God Talk.
Yeah, I definitely recommend if those of you that are listening, if you're curious about the book, definitely find the book on online or on Neil's website. We'll share a link to his website in the description. So I appreciate you sharing those six steps, and they're very helpful. It's always helpful to have people have kind of a landing point of where to practice this and integrate it into their lives. I want to go into the topic of discernment for a moment. And you talked about, for me, discernment is really, because I'm all about heart-led living. So my work and my life is all about leading from the heart. So it's always a feeling for me. I do get information, I get words and stuff like that, but it's a feeling I follow. And it's a like more of an inner knowing or a sense that yes, this is a heart yes, this is a clear movement, or this is the divine moving through me. So I connect to the feeling of it, the energy of it, because it helps me get out of my head about it. Because, like you said, we can overanalyze and it can paralyze us when we're trying to figure out in the head, is this God? Is this not God? So the discernment for me is like, for me, it helps to bring it into the heart space and feel into, okay, is this a divine message? Yes. Okay, then what do I need to know about it? And then follow it from there.
Yes, you got to be out of your head about it. In fact, the way God put it to me was, Neil, in order to receive messages from the divine and to tell other people that you are receiving such messages, you've got to be out of your mind. And people have said that to me. What, are you out of your mind? And I've
Yes.
said to them, actually, yes, I am out of my mind and into my heart. And so, you know what? I'm going to write a book one day called The Heart Doesn't Lie.
Yes.
I just thought of those words a moment ago when you were talking about that, because your mind says things that are illusory, often, not always, but often. But your heart never lies. So I love what you said about heart-led living and about listening to what your heart says, because the heart never lies. Follow your feelings. Sometimes the feelings may be unrealistic, but follow those feelings. I love your idea of following your feelings. If your heart is calling you to be, do, or have something, then be, do, or have it.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. And I look forward to that book when it comes. I want to go into you mentioned a few times contradictions, and I know for me, because I was raised Catholic, and I let go of that for a period of time because I just couldn't reconcile what I was hearing and what I was feeling about God and about my relationship to God.
I
And
had
what I
the
was
same problem.
hearing, yeah, it was very contradicting within my heart. Not even, it was in my head too, like it didn't make sense up here, but in my heart it just felt like something was off. So I stepped away from it for many years, and then I found my own spiritual path, and then it came back to me kind of indirectly and a little bit through A Course in Miracles and a couple different ways, and your books as well. It helped kind of bring it all together. And I started to repair or renew my relationship with God again. And what it was really about was unlearning and unprogramming all of the ways that I was told or taught about what God is or isn't. And a lot of them just didn't feel aligned. So I had to find my own definition, I guess, or find my own resonance with what is God for me? And how am I in relationship to God? And how is God in relationship to me without all of the other restrictive rules about what I was programmed to believe?
I had the same experience, Sue. I was also raised a Catholic, and I went to a Catholic parochial school, actually, grade school. I remember I had an experience that I'll never forget, just to give our audience an idea of what we're talking about, an example. In the third grade, we had a parish priest, a wonderful guy, by the way. He was a wonderful man. Everyone loved him, and understandably, because he had a great personality and he was very outgoing and very friendly with everybody. And he would come into our class once a week, one day a week, for about 45 minutes or so, 30 minutes or 45 minutes, teaching catechism once a week. Every Wednesday, he'd come into class. And this particular week, Sue, he was teaching about the difference between mortal sin and venial sin. For those of you who aren't Catholic, that's like a major offense against God and a small offense against God. And I said, so I raised my little 9-year-old hand. I'm in the third row. Father, can you give me an example of what you mean by a mortal sin? He says, certainly, my son. And I'm sure he's going to say to me, murdering someone or stealing someone's life savings, or, he says, missing Mass on Sunday is a mortal sin without an excuse. I said, what? Father, if you miss Mass on Sunday, he said, well, if you're caring for a sick parent, fair enough. Or if you're, a grown person and you have to work on Sunday to support your family, fair enough. But if you just decide, yeah, I could have gone to Mass, I just decided not to. Or, if you just a person knocks on your door and it's a friend you hadn't seen in 20 years, and they've come to see you for the first time in 20 years, and you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe how have you been? Let's go to lunch. Let's go to breakfast. Let's go. And you decide to miss Mass because it's Sunday morning at 11 o'clock when the Mass is going on. So you go with this. If you get hit by, and he's telling me, the priest is saying, if you get hit by a car on Monday before you had a chance to confess that sin in a confessional and have it removed from your soul by a priest, you will go straight to hell. Now, talk about being told something that didn't feel right. I'm trying to think of a, let me see if I have this straight. God would send me to everlasting damnation in the fires of hell for missing church 1 week of my life? Even if I could have gone, I just decided not to go that particular Sunday. Talk about filling the pews with fear. But the priest wouldn't relinquish. He was says, yes, that's a mortal sin. Now, you know what I did about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, because I do a lot of podcasts and a lot of talking. I give a lot of speeches. I wanted to make sure I was right about that. So I wanted to make sure, I wonder if the church still teaches that. Maybe that was 25 or 30 years ago or 50 years ago when I was, a young child. The church still teaches that it's a mortal sin to miss Mass on Sunday or what the church calls a holy day of obligation. There are 7 holy days of obligation in the church calendar. So, folks, if you miss Mass on those days or any Sunday of your life and haven't gone to confession and had those sins removed, you're going to hell. This is the God that religions want us to believe in. And so you don't think that I'm picking on just Catholics. There are other beliefs. There are other beliefs in other religions. Some religions teach you that if you're a female and you don't have your hair covered, which you don't soon, so you're already in trouble. If you don't have your hair covered and your whole face covered by a piece of cloth with just a little slit that you can see through so you can see where you're walking. Oh, and by the way, speaking of walking, you may not leave the house unless you are in the company of a male relative. This is God's command in that particular religion. I'm not making this up. Or you could belong to another religion where if you particular if you eat a particular kind of meat, pork, you're violating what God has commanded and what God desires. God even cares what you eat, what you wear, and what you say. This is how we are taught about the highest power in the universe. You know what? They could all be right. They could all be right. Every one of those religions could have it perfectly clear. And I'm the one who's mistaken. And if that's true, guess I'm going to hell. But it's like George Bernard Shaw said a few years ago about hell. All the interesting people are there anyway.
I was going to say we'll be in good company. So, yeah, I find that well, anything these days for me, one of the discernment keys for me, one thing that I use as discernment is a question of, is this fear-based programming? Oh, I don't know what that happened there. Is this fear-based programming, or is this sorry, I have a weird thing that's just opened up on my screen.
Yeah, I see the same thing. I'm
There
not
we
there.
go.
You are
Okay, we got
okay.
it back.
See,
So,
oh,
it's
It's a
a fear
sign.
based?
It's a
Yeah, it's a
sign.
sign. I'm not supposed to talk about
Misleading.
that.
We are misleading everybody on this program, and the devil has come to create technical problems.
Yeah, there you go. Or it's a sign to just, it was a nice whiteboard. It was all white. So it was actually, oh, let's bring in the light. Let's bring in the white. Let's bring in the love, right? So
Perspective is everything.
if it's fear-based programming, if it's for me, if it's fear-based or if it feels heavy or if it feels like I don't have a choice in my heart, or if it feels like it's separating, it's creating device, like it's very divisive or separating consciousness, then for me, I know it feels off. And I'm not judging that it's wrong or right, because like you said, there's no right or wrong. I stand in that as well. I don't use judgment. And I believe that God is not a judging God either. But it's a level of discernment in my heart. It's like it feels off for me, and it doesn't align with what I stand for. And what I stand for is living oneness,
It doesn't, it,
interconnectedness.
I would say it doesn't align with how I choose to experience myself.
Yes.
It's out of alignment with
Yes.
how I choose to experience myself.
How
I'm,
you
you know,
choose
I
to
have to
experience
be, I,
yourself and God as well, right? So,
yes,
yeah.
to thine own self be true. And it follows as the night, the day, thou then canst not be false to any man. I mean, Bill had it perfectly. Shakespeare knew exactly what he was talking about. To be or not to be. That's the question.
Live in alignment or not to live in alignment, to align with the inner knowing in your heart, what feels true for you, for
And what
me,
if
is
And what I've
important.
come to understand, Sue, is that there's more going on here than meets the eye.
Yes.
I mean, in life, there's more going on here than meets the eye. So I've taken the invitation. I've received the invitation to look deeply at each moment. What's actually happening? What's actually going on here? And again, Bill put it perfectly when he wrote in the play Hamlet, in the dialogue, he said, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy." Bingo.
There's
So,
your answer.
folks, Pat, I want you to know. Charmaine, I want you to know. Pierre, Linda, Daniela, there's more going on here than meets the eye.
I would love to hear your take on when we communicate with God, when we have a conversation with God. You had three things in your book that you said these are things that can help you discern whether you're speaking to God or whether that message is from God. Three things that will help us understand the nature of God. Do you recall those three things? Do you know where I'm talking about in your book?
Tell me, which, because I've written 40 books, I'm trying to
Yeah,
remember
no, it's
what I
okay.
said in that particular
I
book.
wrote them down. So
Good.
the things that help us discern when we're talking to God, that's kind of my take on it, is,
But I want to say joy, freedom, and love. Would you tell me what the three
well, I
things
like
are?
joy, freedom, and love. But you have written down that God's messages are always in our best interest,
Yes.
carry positive, loving energy,
Love.
and God never sends a message to hurt or injure another.
I know. And you know what's sad about that? Even the Bible tells us that God says, if you read the Bible with a calculator and add up every time there's a statement in the Bible about God telling people that others should be killed, others should be have their lives ended because of their actions or their beliefs, over according to the Bible. God has ordered the killing of over a million people. There's a statement in the Bible, just to give you one example. People might think, Neil, you're making more of it. There's a statement in the Bible that says if a man marries a woman and discovers that she's not a virgin when he married her, he is to take her to the town gates and have her stoned to death. Really? It's in the Bible. I didn't make that up.
And that's part of the contradiction. That's not the God that's not the God I know. That's not the God I speak to and connect to. Yeah. It's interesting to have that feeling and sense and knowing within us that something is off, and then having the courage to either step away from it or let go of that peace. Because I'm not saying people shouldn't be in a religion. I feel like religions have a purpose, and they're a great pathway toward God, and it's a great
I couldn't agree with you
opportunity
more.
for people to find faith in their heart. But you don't have to take everything that you read or are taught literally, for one. And two, if it doesn't resonate with you, we don't need to judge it that it doesn't resonate. We just need to recognize and discern that that doesn't resonate with me, and it's okay. It's okay. And then the rest you can embrace, and the pieces that don't resonate, you just place them aside.
My take on religion is that many of the world's religions, and by the way, there are 4,000 religions in the world right now. I'm not sure whether people are aware of that, but I didn't make that up either. You can Google it. Just get on your computer and go on Google and then type in how many religions are now being practiced on Earth. 4,223 as of last count, currently. And there wouldn't be that many religions if they didn't hold great wisdom. So my take on religions is that the world's religions bring us great wisdom and great insight in many cases. But my experience is that they are simply incomplete. That is, there's more to this story, which is what has caused me to travel the world in the past 30 years since the publication of that first book. And I've been traveling the world asking audiences across the planet the following question. Is it possible? Do you think it's just possible that there's something we don't fully understand here about God, about life, and about ourselves? The understanding of which would change everything. Now, if your answer is no, that's not possible. It's all right there. It's right there in the book. It's in the Bible. I mean, the Upanishads. I mean, the Quran. I mean, the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, it's in the whatever, any one of the dozens and dozens and dozens of holy scriptures. So we know all there is to know about it. If your answer is no, there's nothing we don't understand, then by golly, stick with what is working for you. But my suggestion is if your answer is yes, there are some things that we may not fully understand about God, about life, and even about ourselves, the understanding of which could change everything. Maybe we should all have our own conversation with God and begin to ask, what is it that I need to know? The knowing of which would change everything.
And that's the key, is God speaks to us and gives us the message that we need to hear in that moment. And what we need in that moment isn't going to be the same as in a month from now or in a year from now.
That's
And or
exactly
it's not going to be
right.
the same as the next person beside us.
That's exactly right. Two people in the same moment getting two different experiences, and one person getting two different experiences in different moments. That's exactly right. So pay attention. Pay attention, listen up, and you'll discover that there's more going on than meets the eye.
When we talk up, so this gathering is called Living Oneness. And when we talk about God in the context of what people understand God is in the world, what we've been taught. We believe that God is outside of ourselves, or God is somewhere over there, or up there, or somewhere in heaven, or somewhere else outside of ourselves. And that was really challenging for me too, because I feel like, okay, if God's up there or out there, and often God was a he. So I love that you, in your book, you go from he to she and you kind of mix it up, because I feel like we can relate to God in whatever way, whatever gender feels aligned with us. And if God's out there, it's like, and we were created by God and we are the likeness of God, then why is God out there? So it always felt for me, it's like God's in here, like in my heart, like inside me. But then, of course, some of the programming or training around that or teaching around that would be, you're not allowed to say that. But I feel, and I know you have a similar understanding, is that we are one. We are one with each other. We are one with all of creation, having an individual experience, an individual expression of the divine. So therefore, we are an individual expression of God. And why would we want to punish that part of ourselves? Why would we be condemning that part of ourselves? So, in my experience, God is love, pure love. Therefore, the expression of God is love, creation. Therefore, I am an expression of God. I am one with God, and therefore I'm an expression of that divine pure essence. And that feels resonant for me, and that allows me to feel connected to everyone and everything everywhere all together all at once. And that brings me great peace to know that I am one with God. We are all one with God, and we are all connected in
If
that divine
we are
source.
all one with God and all connected, why are we not all acting as if we were divine?
Yes.
Why do people do what people do?
Because
Why
we're
do
taught
people?
that we're separate. We're programmed to judge. Why can't
Yeah.
we remember the truth? That's my goal, is to give people an experience and a remembrance of the truth.
I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that message to all those whose lives you touch, because I agree with you. Once we take the idea of separation off the table, once we realize that I am you and you are me, you're just another part of me looking somewhat different, no less a part of me than my right hand. You are simply another part of who I am. And we all are simply another part of what God is. I couldn't agree with you more. As Conversations with God says in Book One, all things are one thing. There is only one thing. And all things are part of the one thing there is. You know, my dear Sue, the day that human beings in the largest number embrace such an easy to understand thought, the day that we embrace that thought in sufficient numbers to create critical mass, the world will change. We will never do to each other what we're doing now. We wouldn't have a war in Ukraine that's killing thousands and thousands of people over a border dispute. Excuse me? Over where the borderline is between our two countries. I'm not saying that it's not an important matter. It's an important matter, but important enough to kill 63,000 people? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or now we have an idea that we shouldn't call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of Mexico. We should call it the Gulf of America. Are we going to have a dispute about that? A trade war? Because we, guys, come on. Come on. We're bigger than this.
I feel like part of what you were saying too is when we reach that critical mass, and it doesn't have to be like a large number of people. I feel like if enough of us really embodied this message and really acted from that place of being love in action, being oneness embodied, that we could shift and impact the rest of the population. I do feel like we can hit that point where we hit a tipping point where we influence more than we are impacted the other direction. So I keep holding steady in light and holding steady in being love in action, to hold steady in being peace and speak up when I'm guided to speak and bite my tongue when I'm holding back and not in needing to judge or needing or wanting to fight or fight to be right. It's like, is this serving my highest good? Is this serving the highest good of all? That for me is the biggest question, is this guided? Is my heart leading me toward this to do something, to say something, to take some inspired action? And if not, then am I willing to remain silent, to be still, but to embody the energy of love and be that presence that many people need right now is to be that loving presence in the world.
Mahatma Gandhi put everything you've just said into one sentence. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yes. That's it.
I know Daniela is listening very carefully to everything we're saying. And she's, oh, a little smile. I've been waiting for her to smile all the last hour. Finally, a little bit of a smile. Because she's been very serious. Very serious. But, well, you know, Daniela, when you smile, your whole face lights up. I'm not the first person to tell you that. And thank you, all of you, for smiling. You know what's interesting? I only bring it up for the following reason. Just walking through the grocery store and smiling at the other people. And going through the checkout line and smiling at the checkout lady, and maybe even saying to her, you know what? You're really good at what you do. You're very efficient. Thank you for moving us through here so quickly and with such pleasantness. I always hope I get into your line because you're so good at what you're doing. You're such a pleasant person. Tell people, give people back to themselves. Let them see themselves through you in the most magnificent, wondrous way. And you can change the world that you touch
Yes.
overnight.
Beautiful. I love that. That was beautiful. Give people back to themselves. That was really, that hit my heart really deep. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, Neil. I appreciate you sharing your heart, sharing your wisdom, sharing your experiences and being willing all those years ago to recognize your worthiness to have these conversations and to write the books and share the conversations and extend this message. It's such a gift in the world, and you're such a gift in the world. So thank you for being here so much. I appreciate you.
Those are very kind words, Sue. Thank you very much. And my desire is that I could use my life to live up to such kind verbiage. So thank you very much for saying that. It was lovely to be here with you. And thank all of you for joining us today. Nice to be here with all of you.
Thank you all for being here once again and for contributing and bringing your heart into this space and sharing that intention of being a healing presence, a loving presence in the world. I love you. I appreciate you. I honor you. Until next time, love and blessings, everybody. Thank you. And thank you, Neil.
Thank you for participating in our Living Oneness Initiative to unite our hearts in love for each other, our planet, and all of creation. If you would like to join us for a live gathering, you can RSVP at heartledliving.com/gathering.